Hi, I'm Dr. Marcia, and you're listening to the Self-Care Chronicle. As a licensed psychologist, I know the importance of self-care in maintaining my mental wellness. But I'm often pretty busy running around trying to help others navigate their way through life. And when my schedule gets really hectic, I struggle with self-care. The very self-care that I always recommend to other people. And that made me wonder, am I the only one? How do other mental health professionals handle their self-care? So I reached out to a bunch of my peers and asked them if they would talk to me about their experiences. Join me each week as I chat with a fellow mental health professional about stress management and self-care. Welcome to the Self-Care Chronicle. Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the Self-Care Chronicle. I'm Dr. Marcia, a licensed psychologist. Each week on the podcast, I chat with a different mental health professional about how they handle their own self-care. Today, I'm chatting with Dr. Lori J. Butts. Dr. Butts is a rock star in the field of forensic psychology. She has both a JD and a PhD. She's a licensed psychologist in Colorado and Florida and a licensed attorney in Florida. Dr. Butts is the Chief Executive Officer of the Clinical and Forensic Institute in South Florida. She has served in numerous capacities for local and national psychological associations. She also serves on the board of Different Brains, a nonprofit organization that promotes the acceptance and understanding of neurodiverse individuals. She also hosts a bi-weekly podcast called Spectrumly Speaking, which is sponsored by Different Brains. Dr. Butts' work and accomplishments are just far too many to list in this brief introduction. So after the podcast, make sure you head on over to drmarciabrown.com/deconstructingstress for more details on Dr. Butts' amazing career. Right now, I'm eager to jump into my chat with her. Welcome, Dr. Butts, and thank you so much for being here to chat with me today.
Thank you, Dr. Brown, for inviting me. This is wonderful.
Can you talk a little bit about how did you get into psychology? How did you decide to be a psychologist? And then what was your journey into your current position?
Well, I always tell people that I really didn't decide to be a psychologist. It just kind of happened to me. So I have to go back. It's kind of a long-winded story, but I have to go back to undergrad. I was always going to go to law school. My whole life, I had planned on being an attorney. And then while I was in college, I really had some amazing mentors. And I was in the Honors College at Clemson University and had some great psychology professors and wound up being that being my major. I had a major in psychology. And while I was applying for law school, I said, you know, I really don't want to give up this psychology part. And so then I applied to joint degree programs in both law and psychology. And again, the entire time I was at I was getting my PhD in psychology and my law degree, I was the entire time of my graduate school, I was always planning on being a lawyer with a background in psychology. And I enjoyed doing all the training in psychology and all the practicums and internships. But I was convinced that once I was a lawyer and a psychologist, and I had those credentials behind me, that I would work for a law firm or be a lawyer. And then, so in order to be a licensed psychologist, as you know, you have to do a year of internship and then a year of residency. And while I was doing my year of residency with Dr. John Spencer, I also took the bar examination and all of that. And then while I was there, he was the most amazing forensic psychologist. He was brilliant. And I couldn't leave. And he knew that I was planning on being a lawyer. It wasn't, you know, that was my career path. But he was just so brilliant and did such great work that I became a psychologist and I stayed on with him. And so I feel like he made me do it.
Wow, that's really interesting. And so for you, something spoke to you, even though you had other plans, and then you ended up working with Dr. Spencer And then you just sort of stayed.
Exactly. Okay. I just never left. Okay. I never left.
And so in that position where you are now, what is the most stressful thing about your job?
There are a lot of things that are stressful about my job. And it's interesting. I know we're going to talk about COVID. Things I didn't even recognize when I was in it that I'm recognizing now that things have slowed down a bit. What I like about my job is also probably the most stressful thing about my job. And what I mean by that is my job is not boring. I do a lot of different things. I wear a lot of different hats. But in wearing all those hats, it's stressful because you're getting pulled in lots of different directions. But that's also what makes it interesting and fun. So it's this kind of like double-edged sword where I'm interested in a lot of different things. But, you know, doing clinical work and forensic work, it's a lot of different demands on your schedule, on your time, on your focus, your mental energy, what you need to devote to what. And so I wouldn't have it any other way because I think I would get bored. But at the same time, having all of that action and having all these balls in the air at the same time is also really stressful. And I don't think I really recognized it till like the balls stopped during COVID and I have a lot less going on, which has also been nice to kind of regroup and reset. But it's like I said, being every day within the day, each hour is spent on probably a different type of task. And so it requires a lot of mental nimbleness and a lot of energy. So it's a long-winded answer to your question. But
no, that makes sense. And I can imagine that if you just get used to having, as you put it, a bunch of balls in the air, when that gets reduced, it's then you realize how much stuff you are used to having going on. I think a lot of times we just kind of get used to the way that things are and we don't really stop to think about it until they change. And then it's like, oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's like, wow, I used to do all of that in one day.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know once things ramp back up again, what that's going to look like, but I certainly accomplished a lot of tasks. I'm pretty impressed with myself looking back.
Right.
But when you're in it, you just do it. You know, you're just not, you know, just, that's your routine. And that's so.
You mentioned that you didn't realize some of these things were stressful until things sort of shifted due to COVID-19. So mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how your practice has changed since COVID-19?
It's changed dramatically. So I have not been going into any jails in several months. Part of my job is to treat people that are on probation. And all of our treatment has had to go from in-person to teleservices. And that basically change from one week to the next and trying to convert. I mean, we have a lot of people in two different counties who are on probation that gets mental health services and sex offender treatment services from us. And to do that shift overnight with a population who doesn't have a lot of resources and a lot of them can't even use the internet was really challenging. But over the months, we've gotten into a flow and actually it's been really rewarding. Some of the clients who found in-person therapy intimidating are now talking more, expressing themselves more. People are more open. They feel more comfortable in their house. And also, it's all over the phone, basically. Not many. Some of our state groups are video and phone, but so I'd say probably about 60% is on the phone. And people are just saying that they're feeling comfortable. They like not having to go in the traffic and rush, you know, they can get home and relax as opposed to coming from work and rushing to our office. And so it's been a really nice shift for the clients and for our treatment program. there's a lot of hiccups. And it's really worked well for people that were already in treatment. The getting onboarding people, the intakes and things like that have been a lot more challenging, but we're getting there. So it's been nice, pleasantly nice once we got all the logistics under control that we had to shift so much. I mean, just so much.
Wow, that's really interesting. So the people that you work with are feeling a bit more comfortable with that distance that
yes.
the screen creates.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's yes. really interesting because I think that, you know, we as psychologists are used to usually being in a room with someone because we, you know, so much of what we gather from an interview is just better in person as opposed to on the screen. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that's been for you in terms of changing your services from being, you know, face-to-face in a room with a person you're working with and now having it be through a screen?
So there's a couple of caveats in there. So the people that I've known for a long period of time, like my patients that I've known for a while, and I know their voices and I know what they look like and I know their mannerisms, like I can almost like see, and they're on the phone, they're not on a screen, they're on the phone. I can almost see them, you know, just because I know them so well. Where the challenging part is getting to know new people. So I wish that there was a period of time for the people that have been referred to us during the pandemic that I had met them in person. So I feel like I'm missing. And of course, I have this all in my head. So I'm like kind of predicting, I can see my patients that I know well, and I know how they respond and those kinds of things. So I think I can see their nonverbals in my head. Who knows if I'm deluding myself, but I know their patterns. I know them well. The other people I wish, you know, and I know I'm going to get the opportunity to meet them in person, but it's going to be interesting to see the people that I've met through teleservices. And then when they come back, when they come in person, what I pictured in my head is probably not going to match up to what I see in person. Right. So I think that, you know, I've already developed those relationships with, you know, 90% of my clients. So those are easy. I think there's something to be said about meeting somebody in person and getting to know them in person and then switching over to the screen. But I tell you, I mean, the kinds of things that people are comfortable divulging, even not having met us in person, it's pretty remarkable. And I appreciate, because what we do is pretty intense work and pretty intense stuff that we're talking about. And, you know, so far it's been, people are really willing to bare their souls and to be vulnerable. And all of, you know, I don't want to say all of them, but a lot of my clients say that they're just more comfortable talking about difficult things with this artificial kind of barrier in between us, that they just feel less judged, less criticized, and they can be more vulnerable.
That sort of makes sense, I think, just because there's a little bit of a, as you said, the barrier seems like some protection.
Right.
You're a little bit less vulnerable if there's at least this thing between, you know, you and the person that you're disclosing this information to.
Right. And a lot of work we do is in group too. So it's not just individuals, it's group. So it's not just about the therapist looking at them, but it's other people judging them okay. in the room, things like that.
That's interesting. And in terms of your work, even though now it's a lot of on the phone, a lot of video things where you're not in the room with a person, it's still stressful work. It's still high stakes. There's still a lot going on. So can you talk a little bit about self-care and how you practice self-care? And if you have any go-to methods that work for you, if you could talk a little bit about those.
Sure. I exercise, I do yoga, and I meditate. So all of those things are really, really important to me. And getting fresh air and walking my dogs, like those are like the main things. Or playing with my dogs, like I take them to park or swim with them or things like that. So it's about moving. I mean, obviously all of it is about moving, breathing fresh air, exercising, yoga. They're all really important and they're all important pieces to have on a daily basis. They obviously, gyms have closed And so there, I needed to shift my routine to doing things at home when it was cooler here. I was running a lot outside, which was great. I mean, the weather was great, but it's getting a little too hot for that. So I use workout apps at home to stream classes. You know, you could just pick anywhere from 10 minutes to 90 minute classes, different yoga or stretching or weight classes or indoor cycling class. And it's just great. You know, I try to get to it in the morning, but if not, I can get there in the afternoon. It's a really important part of my routine.
Absolutely. I can imagine maybe after a day of, you know, just sort of having things back to back to back, that yoga is even more restorative to just sort of reset and decompress and relieve all of that stress from the day.
Yeah, exactly.
So for a lot of people, the self-care thing is sort of a journey. It's a lot of like trial and error, trying different things. Maybe they don't work, and then trying some other things to really get the one or two or three things that work for you. For you, was it sort of a journey of trial and error, or were you pretty much able to find something early on?
This has been my whole life. My mom was a yoga instructor and she meditated when I was a kid. So it's been a part of my routine my whole life. Mm-hmm. But there have been times where, especially pre-COVID, there have been times where I can't fit it in my schedule. Like I can't. And when I say it was going to the gym. I couldn't get there before work. I wasn't getting there in the evenings because I was getting home, you know, between 8 and 9 at night, and it just wasn't happening. And then I got injured, and, you know, all these kind of things, barrier, like things happen that interrupt it. So that's why for me, if I don't exercise in the morning, I know that it's going to be challenging to get to exercise the rest of the day. So I try really hard to get it done in the morning, because there's so many things that interfere that you don't expect, that aren't on your schedule, that pop up and things go longer, and then you're just exhausted. And so certainly you can meditate after being exhausted to get, you know, to relax and go to bed. But the exercise piece, I find for me that if I don't get it done in the morning, it's like a 90% probability it's not happening. And I will delude myself and say, oh, I'll do it later. And, you know, later never comes. So that's the most important thing, to knock it out. And it sets the day. But getting in that routine, once you break that routine by injury or by something else, and getting back in the routine is really hard. Once you're back into it, and so certainly over my career, there have been times where your question was, you know, have you gotten into trial and error? Yeah, the trial and error is, you know, there's certain times where it seems an impossibility to get a workout in, but it's, you know, just a trick that you do to yourself to procrastinate, and then you got to get back and get focused. And, you know, it's like, you got to put it on your schedule. If it's not, you know, if it's not in your schedule, then it's not going to happen. So, but, and if it's in your schedule first thing in the morning, it's much, much, much likelier that it's going to happen than for me, at least. I know there's plenty of people that do stuff in the evenings, but for me, that doesn't work. Every once in a while it does, and that gives me the false sense that that I can do it. But it really doesn't.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting, because I'm the same way. It's got to be first thing in the morning. Otherwise, the chance of my actually doing it after I've been running around all day, having meetings, doing this and doing that, I'm just kind of like, no, not going to do it. And so many people are like, wow, I can't believe you get up early in the morning to do this, to exercise. And for me, I admire people who can go after an entire day of work and have the discipline to make sure that they still go to the gym. I find that to be the bigger challenge.
Me too. And part of it for me is I don't eat right during the day. And so not only am I exhausted at the end of the day, but I'm also super hungry. And exhausted and hungry is not the way to go to a gym.
And so would you say that that is still getting it in is the most challenging part of it for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
for some people in terms of the basics of self-care, like making sure that you are sleeping enough, making sure just the very basics, are those things a challenge for you?
You know, they've gotten better with COVID because I'm not in the car driving to all kinds of places. So my routine has gotten much more improved during the pandemic. I don't know it's going to be challenging once things open up, whenever that is, to keep on it. But it seems like we're going to have several months to stay on this, and I'm not going to be willing to give it up when it happens. But yeah, for me, eating right and getting enough sleep when things are stressful is very challenging. I don't eat meat. And if I don't food prep and I don't bring my lunch and dinner to the office, I have problems because there's not good takeout for people that don't eat meat. It's all carbs. So you wind up eating not such healthy things. It's easier to do when you're working out of your house. So you can go to the grocery store, and I'm not spending hours and hours driving every day.
Right.
So I'm cutting, you know, all that extra stressful stuff has been cut out, obviously layered into it more other existential stressful stuff, but the day-to-day stressful stuff has been kind of taken away, which has been nice.
I would agree with that. I feel like I'm getting a lot more sleep, and that whole thing of not having to drive everywhere, it removes some of the nonsense, and I really appreciate that.
Me too.
Can you talk a little bit about what's going on with your practice or any projects that you have coming up, anything like that?
So with the practice, you know, we're evolving and changing. Vanessa Fernandez, who's my treatment director, she's expanding her practice areas into, she treats gamblers, people with gambling problems. And as one would expect, kind of when people have a lot of downtime, there's a lot of internet gambling resurgence. There's a lot of people struggling right now. Even though the casinos have been closed, there's internet gambling problems and things like that. And she's also working on gaming. A lot of people, again, spending time a lot at home, and they're into gaming, and they're having problems with problematic gaming, which is a little brother and sister of the gambling situation. So, and we are also talking about wanting to provide services for professionals who are struggling with all kinds of things that, you know, people are struggling. And especially, I think that this pandemic it's been devastating for so many people on so many different levels. And we have concerns about the healthcare workers. We've got concerns about lawyers. We've got concerns about all of our professions are getting overwhelmed with new and burdensome and grief. And we're focusing, I guess, long story, we're focusing more on clinical work than necessarily the forensic work. Like I said, not sure when I'm going to feel comfortable going into a jail or a prison for my own health. So doing more clinical work seems to make a lot of sense. And it's so rewarding to be able to have this opportunity to help people and to help them feel better and have better lives. It's really rewarding part of being a psychologist by accident, an accidental psychologist.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that's important work and great work. This has affected everyone. Like, this is one of those events that just absolutely everyone is affected by it in some way.
Exactly. And so as mental health professionals, we need to take care of ourselves, make sure we're strong so that we can help other people, you know, recover from the things that they've experienced. So it's really important for us to take care of ourselves first. You know, you got to take care of yourself first, and then you can take care of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's absolutely true. Well, thank you so much for...
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This was really interesting, and I really do appreciate it. What I like to do at the end of each recording session is to ask a question that has nothing to do with the interview or anything like that, but I just like to ask because I just like to know. So this question is just whatever the first thing that comes to your mind. Is fruit a legitimate dessert?
No way. No way. Unless it's covered and dripping in chocolate. No way.
Okay. All right. I like that. I tend to.
And there shouldn't be fruit in your brownies. There should not be fruit.
Oh, wait.
In brownies. No.
Fruit and brownies?
Yes. There should not be fruit or nuts. Sorry.
I've never.
Well, like some people want to throw in raisins or dates.
No.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Need,
right. Fruit should, no. Not a I'm very strong opinion.
Yes. I agree though. There's no reason for that. It seems unnecessary.
Right.
The brownie on its own is perfectly fine.
Exactly.
I agree. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Lori Butts, for taking the time to chat with me. This was, you know, really interesting time.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Dr. Brown.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining me for the Self-Care Chronicle. If you liked this episode, please pass it along to someone else who might enjoy it. To find out more about today's episode or listen to additional episodes, visit drmarshabrown.com and click on Deconstructing Stress. That's DrMarshabrown.com and click on Deconstructing Stress. See you next time.